I'm going to give you all a chance to ask questions just one second, but I just want to follow up on two points. Just getting back briefly to the Beth concept and trastuzumab, bevacizumab. Mark, can you update us on your work on that combination and particularly the issue in terms of the heart?
During the phase 2 trastuzumab, bevacizumab trial, which was for first-line metastatic breast cancer patients that were HER2 positive, and it was given without any chemotherapy, we had an index patient who developed congestive heart failure, grade 4. And this patient, you know, had a lot of other medical issues. They had just had drainage of a large volume malignant pleural effusion, and they took out about a liter and a half, and so they could have had some re-expansion pulmonary edema as a consequence of that. But nevertheless, she was documented by Swan-Ganz catheterization to have a low output, high SVR state, and so she truly had clinical congestive heart failure, and it was in temporal association with participation in that study. So as a result of that index case, we issued a clinical alert to the investigators. We temporarily suspended enrollment of the trial. We did an audit of all the cardiac safety adverse events to date, etc., and we basically found a smattering of asymptomatic grade 1 and 2 adverse events in the first 20 cases, none of which precluded the patients from continuing on treatment on the study, because the way the study protocol was originally written is if patients had asymptomatic declines in ejection fraction, they could hold the trastuzumab, continue the bevacizumab, and then if their EFs normalized, reinstitute the trastuzumab. So we had done that in those patients until this point in time. Subsequently, we've completed enrollment to the phase 2, all 50 patients, and the last time I've done a data sweep, we had 13 patients that had grade 1, 2, 3, or 4 cardiac adverse events. There was just the one grade 4, no grade 3s, and 12 grade 1 or 2. When you look at the grade 1 or 2 events more closely, all of them were asymptomatic. Some of them were judged to be grade 2 because their ejection fractions were 1 point less than the normal range. These were all measured in community laboratories, some by echo, some by MUGA, so it's quite a mix. And each hospital had their own cutoff for normal. In some laboratories it's 50, some it's 55, in one laboratory it was 59. We had other patients with these low-level grade 1 or 2 events that had ejection fractions at baseline of 75, and then because they dropped at 65 but were asymptomatic, that's still a grade 1 event. So we weren't sure what to make of all these events. Plus, there may have been a component of ascertainment bias, because after that index case, we amended the protocol and instituted heightened cardiac safety surveillance. So we were doing ejection fraction assessment at baseline, end of month 1, end of month 2, end of month 4, and every other month thereafter. So the most closely scrutinized group of trastuzumab patients ever. So some of these...
Any correlation with hypertension?
No, it was a small study, 50 patients, so we don't have enough statistical power to draw direct correlations with blood pressure. It doesn't mean they don't exist, but there was no correlation in the first data sweep.
So, JB, I've heard people say about the data that Mark just described that, quote, there's a signal there. Now that I kind of hear him describe it, is it a signal or do we even know what's going on there?
We don't really know if those translate into long-term outcomes or long-term changes.
I mean, do we even know their short-term outcomes? I mean, could this in some way be background noise or something?
I think possibly it can. One thing that we forget about measurement of ejection fraction, in addition to the bar is set differently at institutions, is that measurement of ejection fraction is load dependent. So if you have a patient who's in a protocol who receives an additional liter of fluid and you happen to do an echocardiogram on that particular day, the ejection fraction may read that particular day 5 or 6 point lower. And then you give them a diuretic and you unload them and then you repeat the ejection fraction 3 days later, the ejection fraction goes up. Did something really happen? No. The loading condition changed. So we're always careful that you have to remember. So as you're saying, and as you're alluding to, we don't know what that really means. However, at our institution, what we would typically do if we see the ejection fraction go from 75 to 65%, for example, because we know that that's heading at a point where the oncologist is thinking about, maybe I need to stop drug temporarily. We call the patient in, we talk to the oncologist, and we tell them, listen, if there's a concern, this is a time we think it might be a good idea to view this patient, quote, as a stage A patient. They're receiving cardiotoxic drug. Therefore, we make a decision about putting them on an ACE inhibitor or a beta blocker. And then we follow them the same way as you recommended. If they have no further fall, in their ejection fraction. We would continue. We would not stop a drug that we think might be very helpful for their cancer. And that's how we work with the oncologists.
These people also have had anthracyclines, I guess.
Yes. In fact, the majority of patients that had these occult drops and the patient that had congestive heart failure had prior anthracyclines. But most of them had had just four cycles in the adjuvant setting.
So, Mark, what's your best take on this right now? Do you think there actually is a cardiac, you know, safety issue?
I suspect that some of these are probably real, and I bet it's a result of afterload, since bevacizumab will indeed increase the afterload. And if there is some effect of trastuzumab on cardiac myocyte response to stress, even if it's just a wall stress, what have you, then you can envision, you know, in an armchair sort of fashion. I'm not a cardiologist, so I can't tell you all the physics necessarily, but one can imagine that there might really truly be a drug interaction here. So the important thing about the BETH trial is that it will have very stringent cardiac surveillance. And since it's a randomized trial, we'll be able to directly measure exactly what contribution the bevacizumab makes in the frequency of these events. And there's a early stopping rule built into the study design in case there's untoward toxicity, et cetera. I think this will be very useful to get answers directly.